Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for joining me on the Content Callout. You've got Mark here. We are interviewing Aaron Orendorf today. He's the VP of Marketing at Common Thread Collective. You likely know him as the previous editor-in-chief of Shopify Plus. His work, his content has appeared on Forbes, Mashable, Entrepreneur, Business Insider. The list is endless. And this guy is a content marketing phenom. And when I say content marketing, I really mean marketing in general, because this guy has just provided so much value to the world of marketing. He talks about what works, what doesn't work, and how we can get better at this whole marketing thing. And in fact, today he dropped so many bombs on how to provide value. It is incredible. We talked about everything from SEO rank and SEO cannibals to contextually driven CTAs to single and enticing, above all, glaringly clear offers. We spoke about direct response funnels and offloading work that should be done by specialists, embedding yourself in wider organizations to get and drive more value. I mean, the amount of value that this guy dropped in one single episode is insane. I highly encourage you to follow what he is doing online. I deeply respect the work that this guy produces, and I would really appreciate it if you shared this with your friends, colleagues, with your family. Give us a rating on Apple Podcasts. Tell people about it on social. And more importantly, tell us about it. What did you think about this? Did you get a ton of value out of this like I did? Would love to hear your feedback. Enjoy this amazing episode. Aaron, we made it, man.
Here we are.
Here we are. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Excited to be here, coming in hot and grateful because you're just such a gentleman, getting me prepped and ready to go so your audience gets the absolute best out of me, which you don't care if that means a delay. They don't know, but they should.
They don't know. Listen, I appreciate it, man. I wouldn't be able to do this, as we said, without Amanda, who is sort of my rock in all of this. So shout out to Amanda for helping us out. Amazing work that she does. But we're going to get into a massive conversation about you and content. Before we do that, let's get your hot takes on what are the actionable rapid-fire tactics or strategies you want to share with the listeners today.
Hot take rapid-fire. Number one, audit your site SEO for cannibals right now. Like right now. If you don't know about Googling colon domain, .com, whatever your site domain is. If you Google that incognito for, say, five of your top keywords that you really want to rank for, that's going to limit the search just to that domain, your domain, as long as you use that domain colon, followed by your domain and the keywords. And you'll immediately see if Google is confused, that's what a cannibal is, that it thinks you're trying to compete with yourself for your own keywords. Do that five times in a row and kill anything, consolidate anything that's competing against itself. Number two, go right now, top five, top 10 most trafficked content pages, blog posts, articles, that sort of thing, and add a contextually relevant CTA, a call to action in modal and inline form, pop-up and inline form. The easiest way to do this, figure out what your top 5 to 10 most trafficked content pages are, whip that out into a PDF, throw a gate on top of it, and I'm not joking with you, man. These things convert like 6 to sometimes 12 to sometimes higher percent of even cold traffic coming in to build your email list. Contextually relevant, just make a PDF of your top 5 articles, put it on the page.
Amazing.
Build that list. And then lastly, then go and add an offer. This is going to sound so stupid. We can talk more about this in a second, but I'm telling you it's not. Go and add an offer, a single, enticing, above all, glaringly clear offer to any sales and marketing pages you have on your website, sales and marketing assets. And what I mean by that is if you do not have deliverables listed, timeline listed, and cost listed on the site, you are missing out. I cannot stress what an enormous difference those ingredients have made to the conversion rate, both into the funnel and through the funnel. And I could share some swings and misses as well as some hits on that front. But those three ingredients, indispensable on sales and marketing pages.
Man, way to drop the hammer right away. Amazing value immediately. And this is what you're known for, man. I mean, a lot of the writing that you do, a lot of the content that you produce out there today, to a lot of marketers is sort of like, this is where we need to be. This is how we need to structure our content going forward. Why do you think that you've gained that popularity as a content marketer and sort of that person is like, okay, if I'm going to create written content, this is what I want my written content to look like?
Maybe three ingredients. The first is honesty with what's going on right now. And my own natural enthusiasm, it can be a thorn in my flesh. I get too excited about things as they're going on. And so I want to share about them because I'm shallow. I'm insecure. I want people to think I'm smart.
So
and good.
And, what, so. Yeah.
And so I get excited about when something works. I just love sharing about it. So there's that honesty in the moment of like when something fails, I'm down to talk about that as well as when it succeeds and wins. So I'm just keeping that fresh and current, some screenshots, and then rolling that sort of like social hot right when it happens, rolling that into more long form actual blog posts, having that long view. But just the honesty is number one, that enthusiasm. There's almost this like social proof. We'll call it social proof. One of the things I'm really good at is systematically sucking up to people that I admire and ingratiating myself to people that I admire and then rolling that into...
We got to dive into this.
Okay, we can't. Again, right back to my... All of this is built on character defects. My shallowness.
I love that you recognize that and you've doubled down on it as a strength, right?
I've just rigged my defects into try to make them assets. But I'm so insecure that I want to suck up and people please and all that kind of stuff. So I turn that into a systematic approach to like, I'm just going to get in the world of the people that I admire, systematically suck up for 2 to 3 months and then go in for an ask. And the more I suck up to them, the more I interact with them publicly. Once I go in for the ask, the question, the contribution, that sort of thing, it just really stacks. And so when other people see me interacting with folks that I admire, who they also admire, that builds up. That was a huge part of early on and especially even now. And then, man, I'm just constantly curious and willing to try things out too. That kind of flows out of the first is, yeah, I just don't think I have like all the answers. I'm willing to share enthusiastically and honestly when I have an aha moment or discover something, but I'm constantly going back to why didn't this work? What if we did this instead? Just a constant curiosity and willingness to be proven wrong and then celebrate that in the learning, like to make that the goal.
The thing that I like about what you do is you're not only showing like, okay, why didn't this work? And here's why we believe that this didn't work. And you lay it all out for everyone, but you also show like why things did work. So you're not like holding on to the secret sauce. You're saying, here's what's working right now. Here's how you do it. And here's how you can also succeed. And that's what I love about the three bombs that you dropped at the beginning of this interview is you laid out very easily for people, here's how you're going to improve rank and SEO on your website, like immediately, today, right now, if you do these things, you will get ranked better.
Yeah, especially with that first one. Good night. If you've been publishing content for longer than a year without a real disciplined focus on what keyword, if you've been doing it for 2 to 3 to 5 years, then you can move the needle huge just by consolidating URLs and consolidating content, 301ing everything into this is the page that owns this keyword. That's it. It's insane the bumps you can get like within a week or two. Or
incredible.
Sometimes a little longer, but you can get them fast.
Yeah, incredible. One of the things that you talk about is there's a difference between creating content and creating these direct response funnels. Why the differentiation? What do you mean there's a difference?
Well, for me, because I come from a content background, maybe content marketing background, as I've moved into my new role, so I grew up 7 years or so inside this online marketing world, blogging, guest posting, writing for publications, that turned into actual work. Then I got over to Shopify Plus in the early days of Shopify Plus when that was just taking off and got to start getting my feet wet with, yeah, this content has to do something though. It's got to initiate a sales conversation because there was no opt-in for Shopify Plus. you couldn't even get a plan without talking to a salesperson, scheduling multiple meetings, that sort of thing. With each incremental change in my career or my job responsibilities, it's been more and more metrics driven. And especially now that I'm VP of marketing at Common Thread Collective, now I'm very, very, like myself and the head of sales, it's like, we're the revenue generation machine.
Totally.
And if we break and what the things we're creating don't work, the whole thing goes down. It's scary, but at the same time, it's so good to have that kind of, you have to own a number to have these discoveries come up. And so whereas previously I was like, if I just get to rank, drive a bunch of traffic to this, and then the next step was, all right, but I also got to get them to opt into something and build the email list. And then the next step was, but we got to have like a nurture sequence afterwards or something that starts pushing people to identify themselves. And my probably biggest aha moment of the last 6-7 months, that's when I came onto Common Thread Collective, was here's this agency that's D2C, direct to consumer e-commerce. I'm a B2B man through and through. And I don't know if any of the things that I do with content work in D2C, in B2C. And I was really, really suspect of these folks that loved paid advertising, that they wanted to start running Facebook campaigns. They'd done it in the past. And I was like, listen, I have never seen it work for B2B. It's just such a higher price point.
It's so expensive.
Right? It's expensive.
Oh my God.
And they didn't take no for an answer. And they're smart enough that we sort of started cobbling together these campaigns to begin with. And Taylor Holiday, our CEO, really had a lot of hand. And we built some assets and some creative, some videos, some still images. We built the first couple landing pages, and it was like middling success. But the second we released the ad creative page, meaning like the page that was selling creative packages. Right. And it was one of those happy accidents. This is why I stressed my third point at the beginning of ad, that thing of what are the deliverables, what's the turnaround time, and what's the price point. And this page, simply because we had to launch something in the middle of COVID and coronavirus, because there's huge need among e-commerce companies to refresh their ad creative. And we had created this like network, distributed network of all these different options you could buy. And so it was very transactional. And I dressed it up a little bit with, we got pretty pictures, we got good words on there. But it's the second we dropped that page with that insanely clear, there's three packages, there's two versions of each one. This is what they cost. This is what you get. This is how fast you'll get it. And we started pushing paid traffic to that. It was like, blew my mind that you can actually, you can run profitable through Facebook and Instagram, through freaking Instagram stories. That was one of our most successful placements. Instagram stories for B2B selling multi-thousand dollar price point packages. But that was the thing for me that really, really unlocked it. And that's what I mean by thinking about funnels. That to me was like, oh, we're not just going to drop a blog post or a guide or a landing page. We've got to think through this entire process of, okay, this is the page. Before the page, what are the different variations we can use to drive traffic on the paid front? Where will those live? What assets do we need? And then on the back end, how do we automate quick connections, quick responses to the sales team? If someone falls through the cracks, what sort of nurture sequence should they get? It was a big eye-opener for me, all wrapped up in this idea that paid can actually perform in B2B, but to be forced to think in terms of we need a whole funnel, not just a page.
I love that you've created the through line from like start to finish in that, because I think that's where a lot of people get stuck, especially in the B2B world, is we get stuck on the content piece that drives the traffic to create the nurture campaign, but we don't necessarily think about, okay, how are we going to make this work in the long term? And at what point are we going to begin to convert, and how are we going to test it? There's a big disconnect there in the B2B world.
And it's such a bloodbath for anything that's actually a profitable keyword, like Facebook ad agency. It's gnarly out there in SEO world. And so I would naturally gravitate away from that. Like, I just know with the recency of Common Thread Collective site, with its pretty low domain authority, we're not going to get organic. So it's a lot easier to find more middle of the funnel keywords or even top of the funnel keywords that'll drive traffic. But having a, okay, we can actually, if the landing page has an offer, shocker, just, I would have preached this till I was blue in the face without knowing I wasn't even doing it until this year, that I was building these landing pages that were all features and benefits, but no, here's why you have to click here now. And this is what happens next if you do. Something magical about that expectation. An offer, clarity precedes everything else, and urgency back behind that.
You talk about a concept called offloading aggressively. What do you mean, offload aggressively?
Well, we're just sort of chatting about this before we got started. What am I not great at? Where am I the bottlenecks in my team? And now that I'm in a much real leadership level here, I mean, I was editor-in-chief at Shopify Plus for about 2 years, but that was pretty much just written content. We had a growth team and there was a paid team and there's all these like supporting elements. So even though I was in a leadership role, it wasn't the, now it's offload aggressively is not only for myself, but what are all the things that we're not necessary for, that I'm not necessary for, that my team's not necessary for, that they're not the absolute best at. And I bet there's someone out there on Upwork, and there is, who can do it faster. And it's not even necessarily faster. It's just, I shouldn't be doing that.
Yes, because it costs too much for you to try and figure it out.
Whatever you're not best at, if you're doing, you're right, it's that opportunity cost.
Yeah.
To give your time, your energy to something else besides the things that you can, that only you can excel at. And Upwork has been, I joke about it inside our marketing team, because right now there's four of us with a fifth coming on. And honestly, our sixth member is this Upwork army that my director, Corey Hamilton, has just outsourced like a madman.
There's a lot of great talent on Upwork, man. And they're available to you like within the click of a finger. It's amazing.
It is. And as long as you're able to write clear instructions.
Yes.
This has been kind of a disciplined piece for me as well. It's like, all right, if I got to do it the first time, I need to document it while I'm doing it, or at least screenshot the results that I want to see while I'm doing it the first time, and then get it off my plate.
Yeah.
Make the instructions, teach. And even if you're offloading from yourself onto the shoulders of your own team or teammates, document that process, teach that process, make that the priority. And it's hard to do that because it's so tempting to just, in a pinch, it feels like I can get it done faster. And in a sense, yeah, I can. But to take that extra buffer at the front end, I know it's going to take longer to set this up. But the second I do, I've just freed up that task every other day, every week from here on out. It takes discipline.
There's a lot of temptation around just saying, you know what, I'll just do it. Like, it's just going to be easier if I just do it. It's going to take too long to explain. It's just going to be too much of a hassle. But the danger in that temptation is that now you do that all the time. And now you become the person that shouldn't be doing that because you're not great at it. You also don't have the time for it. It's also not your job to do. And now you've taken on that responsibility when really it should have been someone else's responsibility in the first place. And you're creating all this additional churn in the organization that doesn't need to exist.
I'll tell you, the moment this became really clear to me was I was down in California. I live here in Portland, Oregon. I was down in California. It was the day before Common Thread was shutting down all physical locations. And we were just hustling to let all of our clients know. It was mid-March. Everything's shutting down, all physical locations, New York, California. And we're hustling to figure out, okay, we got to shoot a video to let our clients know. And wouldn't it be great if we also were able to release some aggregated data from all of the clients that we serve to help them navigate and make better choices for themselves and just be that source of leadership and guidance to our clients in this real time of uncertainty. And I was sitting next to Taylor Holliday, our CEO, and we're waiting for this Google sheet to come in. And the Google sheet was simply a data poll of Facebook metrics via this program called Supermetrics. I didn't know enough to actually run it myself. I knew Taylor knew how to do it. He's been in the trenches forever. And I'm like biting my nails mid-morning, why isn't this getting done yet? And I realized he was having the exact same experience, but there was someone else it was actually assigned to. And he made this comment to me of like, I'm not going to do it. I know you want it. I know I can do it. I can probably do it faster and better than this person that's assigned to it. I'm not going to do it. They're going to get it done. I was like, oh my gosh, that's like, and they did. And in that moment, and when it finally got done and I realized, okay, if he'd have done that, he'd just perpetuate the cycle. He shouldn't be doing it, even though he can do it quicker, faster in the pinch. But that moment of like biting your nails and saying, nope, letting it go. Someone else is taking care of this and it's going to be better for everyone in the long run to let it go.
When we do that, and let's just say we're using like an Upwork or another freelancer website, And we talk about the clarity of instructions. At what point do you decide this person's not going to be a good fit? Is there a point that you just say, okay, this is the third time they've tried to figure this out. Maybe it's my instructions, maybe it's not, but it's not working out. Where do you draw the line and where do you cut the cord?
The third time, that's actually a pretty good rule. Maybe the second time, because there's so much opportunity, where give them as much instructions as I can, let them take a first pass at it, give them feedback on that first pass, and if it still doesn't come back the way we need it, then it's time to find somebody new. But the second we find somebody who can actually do it, we're going to throw as much as we possibly can at that person.
Yes, and compensate them really, really well so that they stay on board and they keep your work prioritized.
Yeah, and I'm sure you're not supposed to do this, but what we'll often do is develop these ongoing relationships with a few of the key people and bring
them to
Slack.
You have to, though, because otherwise you're going to lose them. I think like that's the key. If you're going to go on to any kind of freelancing endeavors, finding those people and developing that ongoing relationship is so critical, because to lose that asset, to lose that person, and then trying to start from scratch again and burning through some talent, it's so hard, man.
Yeah, it's murderous because it's almost like doing it all over again.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Are you still running anything in Iconic content, or have you shut that down now?
It's all but a vanity website.
Got it.
That's all it is.
Well, listen, we all need our vanity, right, to be supported. So why not just leave it up?
There it is. Looks good. I got it all designed last year into this year, and then goodbye.
So, amazing.
Pretty.
It is a beautiful website. I will say that. It's a very, very nice website. I want to dive into a little bit of the stuff that you touched in the beginning, because a lot of people don't understand the concept of what an SEO cannibal is. So can you dive into that concept and what that actually means?
An SEO cannibal is two or more URLs. That's how I think of it. That's the bottom line unit of online content, is a URL, an actual page.
Right.
Two or more URLs that Google, Bing, whatever it is, Google for the most part, Google thinks is about the same thing. Hmm. So they're eating into each other. They're cannibalizing each other. Google's going to pick one in the sea of possible websites and pages to rank. You maybe get two pages sometimes, the way some of the snippets now work with a poll. But for the most part, especially if you're not like some crazy DA, domain authority, which is Moz's approximation of how authoritative it thinks, scores 0 to 100, it thinks a website is 50 or above solid. For 90 or above, it's like Twitter. Google has 100 for its own domain authority. But if you're below 50, if you're starting out-ish in the first couple, 3-4 years of a website, that's where it really, really hurts you to have cannibals eating into each other, confusing Google as to what's the page on this one domain that is about this one idea.
I think a lot of people get confused about the alignment of volume versus the idea. And they feel like if they have more volume around that idea, then that's better. But that's not necessarily true.
I've yet to be proven wrong.
You know what? There's a first time for everything, but I feel you're bang on with this one. I feel like you're bang on.
One of my favorite experiments I did, this was about a year ago, and I knew this was true because we ramped up traffic to Shopify Plus massively when I was editor-in-chief there. And this was the crux of it. It's like top-notch content and just consolidated everything keyword by keyword into one URL to rule them all. Massively important. This is the reason, right? Wikipedia, I learned this from Wikipedia. Wikipedia has one page for one idea and they're fucking enormous, and it's interlinked table of contents. And I would go up against Wikipedia for things like multi-channel e-commerce, omni-channel e-commerce. And it was like, all right, if this is what they're doing, I can do this too. Then I wondered, is it also true for non-B2B? So I did this whole experiment with a bunch of different consumer product good keyword terms. And my favorite was how to apply eyeliner. And I did it with t-shirts. I did it with shoes. I was like, who's ranking? For content-related, not straight shopping terms, but content-related direct-to-consumer terms, how to apply eyeliner.
Yes.
And what I found was it was Glossier was lowest domain authority, the one of two actual manufacturers that ranked on page one of Google. Maybelline was the other one, if I remember correctly. Everybody else was like a content site, like actual makeup content kind of stuff, which makes sense. One of two actual manufacturers that was on page one of Google, lowest domain authority. And when I did that whole domain colon glossier.com, how to apply eyeliner, and then ran that same thing through Maybelline, CoverGirl, all these different cosmetics brands, Glossier had by a factor of 10 or more less indexed pages with those keywords on them than all of these other domains that had way higher authority, way longer lifespan. Mm. And now that's not conclusive, but it was the same thing with true with shoes. I did it with t-shirts, that it was almost always whoever had the least got there. And the craziest one, this is one I love the most. It also works on YouTube. So the YouTube videos that now get featured on how to apply eyeliner, yeah. Oh my gosh, who was it? I can't remember. It was like CoverGirl was the bad example. And there was a really good one. Let's just say Glossier again. I know it wasn't them. I could look back and find it. But what they had done on their channel is they had a bazillion different videos on how to apply eyeliner, but all of them were titled differently by the type of look you were going for or the brush you were using or the color palette. And there was only one that was actually how to apply eyeliner. And that was the one Google was grabbing. Whereas CoverGirl, not being as disciplined with theirs, had a whole bunch of YouTube videos that less is more.
Fascinating. And I really think that this is the biggest lie that's been told in content marketing, is that volume is better than anything else. And yes, don't get me wrong, for the content purists out there, I'm not saying volume's a bad thing. Volume's a good thing. It's very good. But you've got to be very careful about how that volume interacts with your SEO.
And it especially gets complicated if you have multiple geographic domains.
Yes.
Then, yeah, language, you can really hurt yourself if you're not disciplined about that technical SEO when it comes to geography.
Dude, you're crushing it on every level that I can think of in the content marketing space. I think there's a lot of people that have learned a lot from what you've done online over the last few years because you've made it so publicly available. If you were going to tell people one thing that you want them to take away from this conversation and where you think this is going, where is the content marketing world going? Where is marketing in general going? What do they need to be aware of right now?
I don't think we're at the point where for B2B video rules yet. Mm. But we're in an in-between time where video content is going to continue to be the medium of choice. Even in B2B, it's going to continue to grow in popularity. And so what I'm trying to do right now is co-create explainer type video content to lay on top of and be embedded within the written content that we're creating. This does a few things. Now, in this case, if you have a page and a video that lives on YouTube in particular, you can rank both of those organically on Google and drive traffic to both without having them fight it out because Google treats those as two different properties.
Right.
But it'll increase time on page, which Google doesn't say it actually uses for ranking, but all the behind the scenes stuff I've seen is the longer I can get someone to hang out on the page in aggregate, the more Google likes to serve up that result.
Totally.
And it's also that this kind of halfway house that I'm trying to train myself and my team to anticipate a heavier reliance on video content, but in the meantime, words are still 70 to 80% of where everything actually ends up. But let's create a halfway house now and start training ourselves and getting better at it instead of going in one of the two extremes. And I think that's the real problem people face is it's easy for me. It's tempting to be a word purist. And there's other folks that it's just churn out video content. And you can do quite a bit with that, but to bring those two worlds together so they complement each other, it just makes it also a better experience for the visitor, the buyer, the shopper, to have those living in harmony.
I love that. And it's not, you can modulate the content as well so that the written word comes from the video or vice versa too, right? Like it's not, you don't have to, right?
I don't know if we're going to be on video. Everybody just saw my reaction.
You're totally going to be on video.
Dude. Yes, in either direction.
Right.
And I stumble into these insights. Taylor goes into the cave. And he comes back out and goes into the lab, like the booth, comes out with these. First, he drops on us and our team these four growth equation videos for e-commerce. And he just had this like stroke of genius where he took a camera, set it up over the top of a piece of white paper, and it's just his hands, and it's him drawing. Like, he's not even a great artist. He's drawing the equation, and he's drawing these little illustrations to go with it. I'm like, I was in the room when he recorded the first one. I'm like, dude, you don't even know.
Gold.
This is it. This is going to change everything. So he does these four on what we call the e-commerce growth equation, right? Which is like your visitors times your conversion rate times your lifetime value or your average order value minus your variable cost equals profit.
Right.
As you got four variables in e-commerce. You got to pick one of those or multiples of those to move if you want to be profitable. And I love the way that he thinks with that sort of clarity. So it's like, here's the big one. He draws it out, little pictures and stuff. And then he's like, then he unpacks each one in a different video. And then he goes back and does it again with Facebook and all these things like single account ROAS. And we just run wild using that back and forth between he's given us the pure, raw, good stuff in this video content. And then our job is to go back and figure, okay, what's the keyword? What's the existing demand in the market? Which is like, what's the keyword volume as well as average cost per click? Because like those two sort of create the balance of this is what people want. This is where existing demand is. So for something like everybody wants to talk about lifetime value, CLTV, LTV, customer lifetime value. And we want to talk about cash multiplier because lifetime is too long to wait when you're in e-commerce and cash flow is king.
Totally.
You need to figure out these 30 to 60 to 90 day windows that we're calling your cash multiplier. And if you can drive up your LTV 30% in the first 60 days and 100% in the first year, you've got yourself a profitable business and product market fit. But nobody's looking for a cash multiplier. So Taylor does this whole video on cash multiplier. And our job is now to repurpose that and turning it into words that'll get identified as lifetime value, customer lifetime value, e-commerce customer retention, but use the pure raw good stuff inside of it. So and it's just that balance between the two. So the content is original, but it's also serving up and identifying, it's meeting the people who are looking for it.
Love it, man. I think this is amazing. You provided so much value in this interview. Where can people find out more about you and what you're doing, whether it's personally or with the organization that you're with right now? Any personal projects that you've got on the go that people can find out about?
Follow me on Twitter. There's only one Aaron Orndorff. I think Google now auto-completes it at O-R-E-N. Might even be O-R-E. I might have moved up in the world. You can find me on, that's where I'm most active is on Twitter, and I'll be sharing all my stuff there. Fairly active on LinkedIn. I'm really low hanging fruit still when it comes to DMs, as long as somebody comes in with enthusiasm.
Love it. Dude, you're crushing it. We love it. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom here today. We appreciate it so much.
I had a blast.
Everybody, I don't know about you, but that episode was amazing. How he dove into the difference between direct response funnels instead of just creating quote unquote content, I think is a big, big takeaway that you should really be thinking about when you're building out content and content strategy. When you're thinking about creating almost an environment where SEO rank can flourish, and we're talking about site audits, especially around SEO cannibals. This is so, so important, especially if you've got a ton of content out there that you could potentially consolidate into single pages. The opportunity to basically leverage up your rank is just insane, and it really needs to be taken seriously in a lot of the work that you're doing. I really enjoyed this conversation with Aaron. I think he's a wonderful guy. I think you should follow him online. You should check out the work that he does online. Check him out on Twitter. That's probably where he's most active, Twitter and LinkedIn. And we would appreciate it if you would share this episode with your friends, family, and colleagues. Give us a rating on Apple Podcasts. We appreciate that. It helps us out a ton. And talk about it on social. Let us know what you think. And let us know what you got out of this and whether or not this has driven value for your organization. Thank you so much for listening to this amazing episode. Have a wonderful day.